This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. In the days following the violence on display in Charlottesville, Virginia, it became more apparent that white supremacy, Nazism, and fascism are on the rise in the United States. This frightening reality has a long history, however. And while it's tempting to want to write off the individuals within the hate-filled movement, one group of survivors is attempting to show that it is possible to have life after hate. My guest is Angela King, Deputy Director and co-founder of the group Life After Hate. Welcome to the program, Angela.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So begin by telling us your story, because I understand your organization consists of people like yourself who at one point or another got sucked into the violent extremist movements in the United States. You got involved with a group of skinheads looking for some sense of community. What happened to you and how did you get out of it?
Well, I grew up in South Florida in a very rural area and learned prejudice, racism, racial slurs, homophobia at home as a child. I was bullied. I was socially awkward. I had no self-confidence, no self-esteem. I was verbally bullied for years. I was physically bullied once and was humiliated even to this day. It's one of the most humiliating experiences I've ever had. And I became very angry and at a young age developed an identity crisis. I searched for a place to belong. I felt completely disenfranchised. And I eventually landed with a group of neo-Nazi skinheads. And once I got there, I was not attracted to them because of what I learned at home, but once I was there, I got the feeling like this is where I should be because I already know this stuff. I've learned a lot of it from my parents. I remained involved in the violent far right for almost 8 years until I was 23 and found myself sitting in a federal detention center. I ended up serving 3 years in a federal prison for my part in a hate crime. And my life changed in prison, not the institution of prison, but the very real experiences I had as a human being and essentially being treated like a human being by people, women I didn't think I deserved it from.
Wow. So you actually were forced to confront the humanity of people within prison that you didn't get to do outside prison.
Yes.
So yes. When we think about what happened in Charlottesville, how do you view this display of violence? Because the internet is a very, you know, offers this very safe space, sadly, for a hatred to kind of foment and for people to find one another, like-minded individuals. It might offer a sense of community, just like you were looking for a sense of community. But then in Charlottesville, which was the largest sort of public gathering of many of these different forces in recent memory, you saw it all out in the open. What was going through your mind as you saw these, you know, many of them, young men and women sporting swastikas and calling themselves fascists and, you know, white nationalists, which is often code for white supremacists?
Yes. I had, it seemed like 100 different thoughts ran through my head at one time. When we started seeing what was happening there, one of the very first thoughts was decades ago when I was involved, I was trying to create what is happening today. We actively worked toward a race war and really inciting civic violence among citizens. And it was really scary to see that is still there. Another thing that went through my mind pretty quickly and early on was the fact that a lot of, you know, regular people don't know really the history of hate in our country, like a thorough history of it, where it stems from, how prevalent it is. And even though it seems like this is a new thing, these hate groups have been here for decades. They're not new. in the very beginning, before the term alt-right was used to describe this whole thing, when it was essentially picked up, it was really nothing more than the same old white supremacists. They cleaned up their language, they cleaned up their image, and they repackaged it into a more palatable form for everyday Americans. And what we've noticed in the past several months, given current events, given the current climate in our country, and our current administration's failure to address these things and to call them out, we've seen this crazy snowball effect happening where, white supremacists that have been around forever are now starting to merge with younger generations who, for whatever reason, feel like they have been, duped or, left out of something that they felt entitled to. And it's becoming a pretty big, scary snowball that's happening right now.
So let's play a video for you and our audience of a young white man in Charlottesville, Virginia, who was captured on tape by filmmaker CJ Hunt. He essentially got separated from his group, found himself among the counter protesters, and decided to take off his shirt so that the symbols identifying him wouldn't be visible and he would find a way to get away. And this is what he had to say about why he was involved.
What's up? I'm not really white power, man. I just came here for the fun.
Nah.
I'm sorry.
You can't just take
your
costume
mean?
Off. What happened?
That you guys scared the shit out of me.
You must leave the area now, or you will be arrested.
So you just came here
I
for the fun?
The
for the fun.
Yeah. So you're not a real white supremacist.
Barely.
Leave the area now.
It's kind of a fun idea.
Which part?
Just being able to say, like, hey man, white power, you know?
Yeah, what's the, where's the fun part come?
This event has been declared an unlawful assembly.
I mean, I was in jail.
For what?
The streets, the park, and the sidewalks. You're to leave the immediate area.
And that is a video captured by filmmaker CJ Hunt in Charlottesville, Virginia, last weekend, where this young man said, I just came here for the fun. It's just fun to say white power. He was extremely young, could have been in his late teens, early 20s. Angela King, what do you make of someone like this who clearly didn't seem to understand what it was that he was involved with and said, it's fun to say white power?
I think, it's hard to hear that, and it's hard, even though I used to be involved, it's hard to grasp that someone can say that's fun. To me, immediately, I think this person needs to have some humanizing experiences. There's some disconnect that's happened there, where either he has not been taught the horrible debt we end up having to pay when we dehumanize others and what it leads to.
Now, what goes through, you think, the minds of these folks? Because they seemed to come to Charlottesville with a very strong sense of confidence, but then left kind of scared. You've seen in recent days videos of some of the men who are identified openly as being white supremacists, racist Nazis, because they did march with their faces uncovered. So social media and Twitter took them to task. Some of them have lost their jobs. One man, Christopher Cantwell, whom we featured on our sh who whose video we featured on our show yesterday, is facing arrest and literally had a meltdown on social media because he's scared. What did they think would happen? Were they living in a, you think, in a fantasy world that they could just come march openly and go home as if nothing happened?
I wish that I could say that. I wish that that was something I could agree with. But unfortunately, I think, and I know from past experience that essentially, right now, with some of the policies that we have seen change with our current administration and the way these things are being treated, it's emboldening white supremacists. It is giving them a get out of jail free card. I mean, I have I've personally seen articles thanking our current administration for backing, you know, the FBI and other agencies off of them and pretty much letting them do whatever they want.
And Angela, I understand that your organization, which was getting some federal funding under the Obama administration, lost that federal funding under Trump, which that action in and of itself says volumes.
Yes, that's actually what I was getting to next is I think we've seen very clearly where our current administration falls when it comes to race, religion, misinformation, you know, really preying and peddling fear. It's still hard to even think like this really happened, but we were awarded a grant. We did not receive a disbursement of funds because the program was frozen as soon as our current administration got a hold of it. And after the list of awardees was already released, we waited months and months of it being frozen only to have our government come out and tell us that they rescinded our grant. And actually, they didn't tell us. We haven't actually gotten DHS to respond directly to our inquiries yet. So we're just going by the statements they've made to media outlets and others. But they literally, you know, we were a top scoring applicant when we applied for this grant. And once the criteria was changed, we were told we were a low scoring applicant. One of the reasons that I've seen in the news is that we do not partner with law enforcement. And that in itself presents a problem because we're not in the information sharing business. We're not out there to bust people. We're there to try to be the credible voices that are needed to pull people out of violent far-right extremism. Hmm.
And of course, the economy plays a big role in these issues as well, right? Poverty fosters scapegoating, extremist ideology. It's tempting to scapegoat people when you are struggling to make ends meet. There was a psychological profile recently done by some scientists of those who identified as alt-right. And their opinion of non-whites was essentially that they were less than human. So that dehumanizing happens or seems to happen pretty strongly within groups that call themselves alt-right. How does your organization actually help rehabilitate white supremacists? Can they be rehabilitated? I mean, the idea of saying, can a Nazi be rehabilitated is such an interesting question. Some of us would want to just say, to write them off. But these are, sadly, you know, these are Americans. They, in the end, are flesh and blood people. When they hurt, they bleed, just like the rest of us. So how can we rehabilitate someone who hates us?
You know, we could probably spend all day just having a discussion about that question. I think there's several things happening all at one time. Certainly, there are individuals out there who do not go out and join hate groups just because they hate people. There isn't a long history of literature, academic literature present to really, you know, look at things like if there are precursors, are there certain things that lead people into that kind of life? One of the most recent pieces discussed non-ideological factors as being precursors to involvement in far-right violent extremism. And some of those factors are trauma, abuse, you know, things like being bullied, needing something, you know, having a void that needs to be filled. But on the other hand, also intersecting with those things is that there's a lot of confusion about violent far-right extremists and white supremacists versus the system of white supremacy that we live under in the U.S. It immediately, you know, gets people angry and defensive, and there are conversations that really need to be had around that, and we need to really be able to dissect these things, look at how they intersect, and to maybe, you know, tighten up our language, because we kind of speak over each other about these issues. And I would also add that since I'm a former violent far-right extremist myself, when I was involved, I thought nothing would ever change me. I thought I would be like that forever. And when I regained my humanity, when women, you know, treated me like a human being, and when I didn't even see myself that way, that changed me. Hmm. It changed the core of who I was as a human being. And I can tell you that it is absolutely possible to change. But that change, in order for it to be sincere, means that the individual has to address the voids, the issues, the precursors that brought them to that mindset in the first place.
Like an addict, they have to want to change themselves, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Angela, tell us about Exit USA, which I understand is a program of Life After Hate. And we have a short video, a PSA that we'll play about it as well. But tell us about what this program is.
Exit USA is a program that we came up with a few years ago because we started hearing from individuals who reached out to us saying, hey, I was involved in that and I don't want to be there anymore, but I don't know how to leave safely, or, you know, I need help. I have these tattoos that I put on myself or these other barriers or obstacles. And because our entire organization was founded and run by former violent extremists, we all know that it's possible. And who better to help others disengage from it than people who have already gone through that process? So the way it works is we do not go out, you know, trying to convert people or talk them out of their racism or their hatred. We let individuals come to us, or they are referred to us. So, you know, we receive referrals from anyone from a social worker to, you know, a concerned parent or loved one, and individuals themselves who reach out asking for help.
And here is a short video, sort of a public service announcement that we will play now from Exit USA.
I was out there that night, drunk, stupid, and looking for a fight.
When my mom found out I was gay, I was 13 years old. She threw me out of the front door, locking it behind her, and that's the last time I ever saw my mom.
Someone yelled, "Get the f-." I kicked him in the head and watched it snap back.
I remember looking into those eyes. The moment I saw him again, I had to think, can I forgive him?
I spent half my life thinking that I killed him. I feared what I didn't understand, and that fear turned to hate and violence. Hate is like a cancer that will eat you alive.
Until there's nothing left to forgive.
If you or someone you know is in the dark world that hate takes you to, we can help. No judgment, just help.
And that is a video about ExitUSA.org, a program of Life After Hate. It's a video featuring a violent white supremacist and his victim, a victim of his hate crime, together. Angela King, where can people find out more? Is it just ExitUSA.org that they can go to if either they themselves are looking for help, or maybe a family member that they want to just show that, you know, there is another way?
They can contact us in several ways. We're all over social media, Life After Hate and Exit USA. ExitUSA.org is a contact form that is literally just a quick form someone can fill out. We also receive a lot of contact directly through our Life After Hate website, and that's lifeafterhate.org.
And we'll post those links on our website later today. Angela, seems like your work is more necessary than ever right now. So good luck to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Angela King, deputy director and co-founder of the group Life After Hate. And we've been discussing whether Nazis and violent white supremacists can be rehabilitated. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.